kakakum kuni ni chunilrani unomka Thursday and Fish Talk is online now. We have two phone lines available for callers. Chamkimumka apit kang kakufchi kwaskaya gaguluchi nasunrit nakham kpink kakufchi during Fish Talk. Are the available lines are 907-543-2756. Unasu Latinka 1-800-995-8954. Malrunikas today here, and I also have Sam Decker that is online through the phones. If you guys can introduce yourselves, maybe beginning with you, Tris, and then you, sir, will be right after her, and then Sam. Okay.
Goyana, Sam. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Therese Vicente with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. Happy to be here today.
Hi, my name is Jacob Wade. I'm the fisheries biologist for ONC.
Oh, wow. Jamai, good to meet you.
Nice to meet
I'm
you.
Sam Berlin.
Nice to meet you.
Host Algo. Sam, are you online?
Hi, Sam. This is Sam Decker with Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And do we have one more? Or is
yes,
that
we
it?
Do.
Kitaki, introduce yourself, please.
Hello, my name is Tim Benbenek. I'm a Subsistence Resource Specialist out of Fairbanks with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Wow, Fairbanks. Okay. So I have four people available to answer. I'm pretty sure that you guys have that have reports that you guys need to bring out to our listeners out there. Remember, we have only two lines, 907-543-2756. This 800 number, 1-800-995-8954. There's also email radio at kyuk.org. That's another available email. It's bilingual, so English, Yuchtun, however you want to talk when you call in, we're open. Maybe I'll begin with you, Tris, since you're here, and I know that you have something there that you need to get off your chest or read off your papers.
I don't know if it's anything that heavy, but I'm glad to be here again today with the Intertribal Fish Commission. And I think our whole team, our staff, our in-season managers, our council is kind of breathing a, big breath after the salmon season,
yeah.
Since we're mostly done here on the Kuskokwim with salmon management and salmon fishing. So I'll just share, just to start us off, maybe a recap of the 2025 season, and the
yes.
other guests could jump in too.
Uh-huh.
But this year, as has happened for now 10 years, the Intertribal Fish Commission co-managed salmon fisheries on the Kuskokwim with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge. This year we had 5 in-season managers sitting at the table with the Fish and Wildlife Service management team. Those in-season managers come from communities river-wide, bringing perspectives from across the Kuskokwim region to the management table. I just wanted, before doing anything, I really just want to express gratitude for them, give them a shout out, because they've worked so hard throughout the whole season to stick to our management plans and do the best they could so people could you know, fish some, get subsistence salmon in the smokehouse, but also protect fish for future generations of fishers. So a big thank you to Betty Magnuson of McGrath, Tracy Simeon of Dwathbluck, Mike Williams Sr. of Akiak, Henry Hunter Sr. of Bethel, and Paul Cleveland of Gwynhawk, as well as James Nicorai of Gwythluk and Nick Alexia Sr. of Nicolai, our two elder advisors who guide our leaders every step of the way. So those in-season managers, that team, starting back in May, was meeting with Fish and Wildlife Service to start to think about salmon fishing and salmon management in federal waters of the Kuskokwim from the mouth of the river up to Aniak this year. And federal management began June 1 and until August 7th, when federal management rescinded, they announced, I want to say, 15 or so different set and drift net harvest opportunities for federally qualified subsistence users, or essentially local residents of the Kuskokwim who have kind of a priority in subsistence here during federal management. And they, our managers, did a really good job kind of sticking to the management plans we have in place to conserve salmon, especially when, you know, Chinook, Chum, and Coho have seen some pretty big declines over the last recent years. And also try to allow people to get sockeye salmon in the smokehouse, because the sockeye have just done so, so well. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to jump ahead of Sam Decker. I know Fish and Game has the sonar counts, but I could just share, you know, I think Sam could speak more probably to the sonar season and that project. It's a great source of in-season information that our management team uses. They also use local and traditional knowledge, community updates, and in-season harvest estimates that we help produce. But really, we saw kind of high level, you know, the Kings and the Chums had fairly similar stories this year. They started coming in really strong. They came in, you know, maybe a little bit earlier than recent years. The fish were bigger. We saw really healthy chums. Yes. Heard a lot of reports of that, which is good. But people up and down the river were saying they weren't harvesting as many chum as they expected to. They were harvesting good numbers of king salmon and good size king salmon. And I didn't hear too many reports of any diseases or worms like I have in recent years. So that's really good. But the counts were a little bit lower than we were anticipating. So kind of looking back, you know, we're just starting to kind of look back at this season, and we see our king salmon counts and chum salmon counts are still below, you know, historical abundance, like people saw, you know, 30 and more years ago. Mm-hmm. Sockeye salmon were great this year. Almost a million sockeye salmon up the Kuskokwim. I think that is probably one of the highest, if not the highest, runs on record. That's great. And I know, just being in Bethel and fishing in the Bethel area, I saw lots more people getting out with dip nets to harvest sockeye, just testing out that technique. I know I talked with one guy, he was out, and in a couple hours he and his fishing partner had 50 fish on board, all reds. Wow. When they were running really strong. So that's really good. And then silver salmon is, I mean, they're still going. They're mm-hmm. pretty
they're
much
out there. Yeah. Yes, they're out
yeah.
there.
Yeah. And they came early this year.
Early.
Yep. They came really early. And the silvers I've seen are good size. They look healthy. And they're coming in higher numbers than in recent years, which is awesome. It's hard to tell if they're coming in as strong as they used to, though, because people back in the commercial fishing days, mm-hmm. you know, we used to harvest over a million silvers yeah. between commercial fisheries yes. and subsistence fisheries. I don't think the run is there yet, but it's definitely stronger than recent years, which is good. So
it certainly is. Sam, do you have anything to add to what the reports, with the reports that we heard?
Hi, Sam. Hi, Therese. Thank you. Yeah, I can update a little bit on what's going on with the sonar and the weirs.
E.
So our sonar project is in the process of shutting down right now. Their last day counting was August 24th of this year. And the coho run that they counted on that day was 392,000 fish, which is a pretty good number.
Yeah.
That's reflecting what we're hearing from the subsistence fishers and from people up and down the river. So that's good news. We still have the Kugluglug weir and the George River weir that are operating to count those cohos as they come in. I was just going to look up real quick what was our count so far, but those will run through the end of September. So those will be counting for quite a while still. Let's see, what else have we got going on? So folks might see a lot of increased traffic at our sonar site. They're going to be taking things apart and hauling things down to Bethel and putting things away for the season. What else do we have going on? We're writing reports, getting ready to have our advisory committee meetings to prepare for the Board of Fish. We'll be looking for public comments on our proposals. The only proposal that we have on the Kuskokwim this year is one that I put in, which will be adding eel sticks to the allowable non-salmon harvest gear. And that will, bring the regulations into line with traditional practices on the Kuskokwim River.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more about that board meeting that's going to be coming up? Where is it going to be, and what is it going to be this winter?
It will be this winter. Yes, the Board of Fish meeting is the state process that happens that reviews. This is the AYK Board of Fish meeting, which is the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim. And the Board of Fish is a group that's appointed by the governor and represents commercial sport and subsistence interests and makes all of the regulations that kind of are the guardrails by which fish and game can operate. By which fish and game managers can operate. And so this is the entity which is all driven by the public that makes determinations on proposals. So, for example, I being a manager of fish and game, I can write proposals. So can advisory committees. So can the working group. So can any individual if they have an idea that would help improve our fisheries management. So I wrote a proposal that said that I would like to add eel sticks to this particular regulation that would allow it for harvest of non-salmon species. So eel sticks are used for harvesting lamprey. And I think that my justification for that proposal is just that I think it was something that was overlooked. And this would bring the regulations into compliance with what people are already doing on the river and what they've been doing for millennia.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want to support that or if they want to oppose that, they can provide their public comments to the Board of Fish. The meeting will be November 18th through 22nd in Fairbanks at the Pikes Waterfront Lodge. Mm-hmm. And if people don't want to attend the meeting, but they want to provide comments, the comment deadline is November 3rd, and we will be putting up some links on our Cusco Fishing ADF&G page so that folks will be able to find those links really easily to submit any comments that they have.
Anything else there, Sam?
Well, I think that's all that I have for right now, but I am excited that Jacob and Tim are online as well, and I'm hoping that they can talk about a really important part of our run reconstruction, which is the Cusco post-season salmon harvest survey that's coming up.
So if we can have one of those persons that are online to come on, or maybe I should have this guy here from ONC. This is the first time I've seen him here at the station, and I would like to give him an opportunity to say hi to everybody out there and give a little report of what they've been doing all summer.
Hi, yeah, so again, my name is Jacob Wade. I'm the fisheries biologist for ONC. I started this position in January this past year, or in 2025. And this is my first season run doing the in-season project. And so we hired four technicians from here in Bethel to help out with the subsistence harvest surveys. And with every opener that was announced, we would go out and either have people stationed at the boat harbor collecting surveys as people came back in, or we would go out to fish camps and interview subsistence users out at their fish camps and just kind of collect the numbers. We would then take those numbers and send them to the Fish Commission to help with their analysis of what was being caught this opener and the harvest estimate and the harvest effort that was being used, so that way that the Fish and Wildlife could better manage the fishery. We also continued with our fish distribution program. Although the Bethel test fishery was not operating this year, we reached out to the sonar site, who was gracious enough to give us half of the catch that they were, apportionment catch that they caught up at the sonar site. So we went up daily and picked up fish from the sonar site, brought them back down to Bethel, and we would distribute them out as best we could.
Was there any of those fish being distributed to villagers like Guihluk, Akechok, Akiak?
So the sonar site normally in the past years would give all their fish apportionment catch to Guihluk. We reached out to them, and that's why we only took the first, like the morning half. So we would go up there about 1 o'clock every day and pick them up, and then Guihluk would get the rest of the fish that they caught that day. So pending on, you know, the tides and the catch and, you know, how the fish were moving that day, kind of depended on how many fish went each direction. ONC does not distribute any fish to the surrounding villages. Mm-hmm. We just didn't have the manpower funding to get down to some of these other villages. And just the amount of fish that we distributed this year was quite a bit lower than in the previous years, just because of how the sonar site, they try to release all their fish that are still alive that aren't going to die, versus the Bethel test fishery kept a lot more of them. So in the previous years, we had a lot more fish to distribute versus this year. And so that's something that I'm going to see if we can try to get more fish next year for fish distribution. It did help this year that the kings and the chum were really healthy and larger size, even though the runs weren't quite what we wanted. People were still getting a lot of fish and filling up their smokehouses. Mm-hmm. So the need for fish distribution was less this year compared to previous years, but there were still plenty of people who needed fish. And so we were trying to meet those needs. Like I said, we didn't have as many fish in previous years, but so we did the best we could to get those out. Like I said, we're going to be working on trying to see if we can get some more fish for next year. So that was going on all through June and July. And then at the end of July, we had our annual ONC Science and Culture Camp that goes on every year. And we had 12 students from surrounding villages that came in, and we had maybe get college credit for this class, and the class and the camp went amazing. We had the Fish Commission came out and did a salmon identifications for us. Fish and Wildlife Service came and did a couple of talks to us, and then we went up to the sonar site, and Iris and Keegan were awesome in letting us come and giving the kids a tour of the sonar site and stuff like that. So they had a great time, did some ethnobotany, some hikes and berry collecting and all sorts of fun stuff. And so the kids had a great time. It was a great experience for them. They got some college credits for it, and it was a good experience for me as well, just to be a part of this camp, especially as someone who's not from this area. So it was really, really awesome. I get to see a lot of we had one student in particular who was really great drummer, and so really brought a lot of really great drumming to some of the activities, and so it was really cool to get to see some of that.
That sounds great. During during the cultural week, I've heard of people doing scaling, taking scales from salmon. And what is that? What exactly are they looking for when they do that? Or
so that's a part of another one of our smaller side of our projects for king salmon. We will take three different scales from a king salmon, and we take their length of them, and we take the sex, and we cut them open to, you know, verify if it's a male or female, and we send all that information to ADFNG back in Anchorage, and they kind of construct a database of what all, like the size of the king salmon, the sex, you know, basically give us an idea of, okay, how many we're returning are female, how big are these females, and then also the scales allow us to kind of like the rings inside of a tree. You can kind of look into them,
okay.
So the age of the kings, and see, get their age of them. Are they coming back 5 years old or four? Are they actually coming back when they, you know, later in life when, you know, they used to? So we're trying to see what age they're coming back, how healthy are they when they come back, you know, and then just how many of them are male and female. So that's a big, another one of our big projects that we have going on with our kind of our harvest, kind of a side shoot of our harvest monitoring. So we teach the kids about that as well. We also, like I said, that's something that goes on during all year long. And you can get, we have like a little reward if you send us in scales. You can get $5 per salmon, per sample that you send us in. So three scales, the sex and the length of it are all part of one sample, and then you can get $5 per sample. So
yeah, we do have another person that is online. I can't remember the name, but if you're still there, do you have anything that you want to make a report on or add to what you've been hearing?
Sure. Good afternoon, and thanks for having me today. My name is Tim Bembenek, and I work for Fish and Game Subsistence Division. And so I'm the project lead for the annual Kuskokwim postseason salmon surveys. So you may be familiar with the folks that go door-to-door each year with the surveys.
Yes.
And, you know, I wanted to give just a little overview about the project and then maybe some of our timelines and dates that we'd be like to arrive to the communities. So, yeah, and so the purpose of the project is it's mainly to estimate the subsistence harvest of salmon. And we typically visit 28 communities throughout the Kuskokwim River drainage. And, you know, we do this by doing our door-to-door household surveys. And it's really, it's amazing to me. We get it done in about 8 weeks' time, and it's with a lot of help. There's a lot of collaboration, including ONC, who's our cooperative partner in Bethel. And, you know, this project's been ongoing since 1990. We've got a really long data set of salmon harvest, and that data can be useful from all the way from the community level to the local advisory committees and the federal side of that, the regional advisory councils, as well as ONC and Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service can all benefit from that harvest data. And as Sam mentioned, it's it helps with the run reconstruction each year. So it's a really important project. And like I said, we get it done in about 8 weeks. So I'd also like to thank everybody that helps out, including ONC staff, the Fish Commission staff and Fish and Wildlife, Native Village and the Paiute, and all the Tribal Council office staff are so friendly every year. And, you know, our surveyors who work hard, and then especially to each of the residents in the Kuskokwim that share their data salmon harvest every year with us. It's really an honor to be a part of it, and I really appreciate the collaboration. So this year, we are looking for a timeline. We are looking at heading out to Aniak on September 8th, as well as Sleep Mute. And then we'll be working in Lower and Upper Kalskag, Stony River, Chewaskawa, Crooked Creek, and Red Devil area, till about the 18th. And then we're going to try on the 19th to get down to Quinnahawk, and then move out to Good News Bay and Platinum. And then we'll head back to Bethel for a couple days of rest, and then we'll start the Lower River communities. We'd like to get started there about September 26th. and hopefully finished up by October 15th. Mm. You know, that includes all the way from Tulik-Sac and out to the Tundra Villages there, down the Napakiak, the Buskiak.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bethel, we're hoping to start with ONC, our partner, October 1st, and hopefully have it done by mid-November. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And, finally... Oh, yep, go ahead.
If you can hold that line, just keep it in your thought. We have a caller online from here in Bethel. Good afternoon. Nauka, Bethel caller?
Good afternoon, Enoch.
Huaka, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to all of you. I heard about the big silver escapement. And, I feel commercial fishing should come back. We used to commercial for chums and reds, but I believe chums are out of the question. But silvers, why I say that, that was the only income me and my people had on the Yukon and Kuskokwim Arctic rivers. And I feel that's what... kind of open up and equal out the commercial fishing. But I think that should be done. And question number one would be, back then I tried to renew my permit, $80, and they send my money back stating our fishing closed. And if commercial fishing happens to open, would we be able to renew our permit, commercial fishing permit? That's my question number one. Another concern, somebody mentioned non-salmon species. Moose hunting's opening up. And one big concern I had is my daughter got off the Anchorage Bethel jet, and there are a lot of, maybe what you say, sports hunters. Mm-hmm. And ask my daughter, what do you mean by that? They all had gun cases. And then I asked my buddy Chuck this morning, what's open anyway? He said the Yukon area is open.
Unit 18.
And then I, my biggest concern is our subsistence moose hunting area should be protected. And I hope you're on federal and state fishing game. I hope patrolling is being done in enforcing those laws, and because the only access we have right now is by boats. Those areas should be protected from sports hunters. And, well, anyway, I'll hang up and I'll listen to my questions and, I feel the Yukon and Kuskokwim moose hunting area should be protected from these sports hunters coming in. And we have hunting guide planes here in Bethel, so I hope they're being patrolled and enforcing our moose hunting areas. Okay, good afternoon.
That question about the commercial fishing permit, I think they're on hold until there's going to be a buyer coming into our area. That's what I really don't know. Or do any of you have an answer to that? Or the ones that are online, Sam?
Yeah, thank you, Sam. This is Sam Decker with ADF&G. I can talk just a little bit about this. Those commercial fishing permits are really important assets for your families. There are hundreds of them in the Kuskokwim area, and we're really hoping that folks hold on to those. There's a lot of flexibility that comes with having one of those. You can sell them if you want to. You can lease them. You can also give them to your children. and it's something that is an inheritable asset for the future. Because we never know what's going to happen with the salmon runs, we can't guarantee that there will be a commercial opportunity for a fish. A lot of what changes the salmon runs, a lot of the influences of the salmon runs, are things that are outside of our control. The water temperature, the prey that is present in the ocean, the currents in the ocean, a long time ago I did a master's project on king salmon and spawning habitat, and what I did with this enormous literature search was we determined that there were about 150 different measurable criteria that impact the return size, the king salmon specifically run size, as they develop from eggs in the gravel until they're returning as spawners. And so there's a lot of things out there that influence the size of those salmon runs. We do our best with the things that we can manage. Beyond that, our mandate, whether it's, you know, I'm with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, but I also know that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has the same mandate to meet our escapement goals. The escapement goals are what provide fish for the future. And then after that, to provide for that subsistence opportunity. And for that, we have guidance from the Alaska Board of Fish. And they have, through consultation with different advisory committees and public input, and talking with scientists as well, determined amounts that are necessary for subsistence for all of the species based on information from the Kuskokwim River, from fishers historically on the Kuskokwim River. So it's mm-hmm. Kusko-specific amounts necessary for subsistence. Those are given as ranges because we know that there are so many things that change, that can change a community's need for salmon. One of the biggest influences is dog teams. And so when those dog teams declined because the snow has declined, because family sizes have declined, because people now prefer snow machines over dogs for transportation, that has reduced the amount of fish that people harvest. But we consider dog food to be a subsistence use, and so that is still part of this amounts necessary for subsistence. So we have our escapement goal, we have our amounts necessary for subsistence. When those have been met, then we have the opportunity for commercial. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that is determined in season, depending on how the runs come in. For example, you know, the last 10 years, there is a abundance of sockeye. Let me get back to my numbers for sockeye. We had 920,000 sockeye come in as of, August 20th was the last time that we saw sockeye, and we ended the sonar on the 24th. So the last 4 days, we didn't see any sockeye coming in. Mm. So the sockeye were very, there was a lot of sockeye on the river this year. And we are seeing that at our weirs. We're seeing double and triple the amount that we've normally seen for sockeye turning up at the weirs, heading to the spawning grounds. So there's definitely opportunity there. The coho this year, because there was an abundance of coho, we were willing to offer some very limited commercial opportunity. The caller is correct. When we don't have a registered processor, like the plants that you've seen in the past, folks remember those, mm-hmm. Then permit holders don't have to pay their permit maintenance fee.
Yes.
That gets waived by the CSEC, which is the ruling body for those commercial permits. I think I covered that. So, you know, when we look for commercial opportunity in the future, even us, I work for the Division of Commercial Fisheries, right? So you would think that I have a commercial point of view. But our mission statement emphasizes escapement goals, subsistence opportunity, and then the economic well-being of the people in the area, in that order. So even though I'm in the Division of Commercial Fisheries, my priority is escapement. My next priority is subsistence. My next priority is economic opportunities, the economic well-being of the people. So, and then I guess I just wanted to say one more thing about the concern about hunters coming in from other areas into the Yukon, into Management Area 18. I am not a hunter, and I am not a moose biologist, but I can tell you what I have heard from the other moose biologists who work in the office with me, and that is that the Yukon area specifically is at great risk of overpopulation with the moose. When they have been doing, they go out and do different kinds of surveys where they measure the fat on the moose, and they're taking blood samples from the moose to run analyses looking at the amount of stress that they're under. They do browse surveys, which is they go and they look at the trees that the moose depend on for food, and they look at whether those trees are growing well or whether the trees are being stunted because the moose are eating so much of the twigs. They're getting down to the branches, they're getting down to the bark. There are too many moose in that area, and the concern there is that it will cause a crash in the moose population. And so I understand that people have, and there are many, many valid concerns about outside hunters coming into your area. But we really need to reduce that moose population so that we don't wind up with a crash in the moose population, which would further impact the ability of communities to subsist on their traditional foods and their landscape.
Yeah, that reminds me.
If you have more questions.
Yeah,
well, I was just going to say, if you have more questions about moose, I would really encourage you to call the Fish and Game office, or in Bethel or in Fairbanks. There are Pat and Keith and Phil are all people who live there in Bethel, and everyone knows them.
Uh-huh.
Ask them questions. When they were doing browse survey, they cut down a willow and brought it into the office so that you can see what it looks like when there are too many moose on the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, knowing the hardships of the people on the Yukon River, I would be very sad to see a moose crash over there to deal with, as well as the salmon crash.
Yes, that's something that has happened with elk in Yellowstone when the predator was eliminated out of that area, and they had to bring back the wolf in order to put them back in control. And what you have mentioned makes a lot of sense, and I know that you're under the fish group, and yes, this is also a fish talk program here. But coming back to that other person that is online, we cut him off early due to a caller. If he can come back on and finish up.
Yep, I'm here, Sam. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Lee?
Yeah, I didn't have much else to say, but I'll say that I appreciate the opportunity to talk. We're looking at, like I said, we're going to start sampling Bethel around October 1st, or the first week. We'll be surveying there till about mid-November. And we're hoping to get wrapped up by about Halloween with the whole drainage. So we would start September 8th, and we'd be wrapped up by the end of October.
I kuya nakpa akut awai report taktogalgita ilait pikkeluki yhtun manna mai like a monthly base. Iralum illoni attachkum report tachluki ukut intertribal fish commissioner and kwakan una trisak Sam Decker. I know that she'll be wanting to make reports on what's happening after the meetings too. It we will be given that time. Manakwani unnomuk atuk put on a weekly basis pilas put manna aru la katachtok report tachtok luteng supilrit wrap up pachtut magunak na kailuteng naknik pilchumknik awai su we're again na kailuteng naknik pilrit equipment dating mawat mamtrechenen tait katachaluki sasakput una akka ikuklit mun pikatachtok illai toy pin riling rata chale una trisak chale report akang khan tris. You had something else that you wanted to
Koyara Sam. This is Therese Vicente with the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission. I actually just had a question for Tim about the postseason surveys, which have really a great time series, great comprehensive information about subsistence salmon harvests in our region. When you and your team go door to door in the Kuskokwim villages and ask people about their harvest this year, what are some of the questions you ask? I'm just curious, like, what people could expect to be asked, and is it anonymous?
Yes, thank you, Therese. Yeah, I'm happy to answer that. So first off, all the data that we collect is confidential and voluntary. So that means that, you know, we don't publish any names or any photos or anything without anybody's consent. We're respectful if someone says no. So if you refuse a survey, that's fine. And, you know, you're under no obligation to do so. And typically what we look for is we ask to speak to the head of household. We ask how many people live in the household. So that gives us an idea of any changes of the household. And then we ask about household salmon harvest or if somebody even helped cut. We ask if they participated, yes or no. So if they didn't, then the survey's done. But if they did, then we ask them what kind of species they caught, kings, reds, chums, silvers, or pink. Kind of a location of where they caught the fish. We have a little map that we use to help folks out. And then what kind of gear type they use. So was a set net, drift net, hook and line, fish reel, dip net. We also record if they gave any fish away, because sharing is a very important part of subsistence. We recognize that. And then we ask people if they're planning on fishing for any more silvers, if we're there in September time. And we ask if anyone lost any salmon due to the weather, bears, et cetera, or dogs maybe. And then Sam was talking about dogs as part of amounts necessary for subsistence. We do ask about dogs as well. How many whole salmon were fed to dogs. And then also we ask questions about whether the fish were subsistence caught, commercial caught, where they're from the test fishery bin in Bethel. And most importantly, at the end, we ask if a household met their subsistence needs for each species, and yes or no, and then why. So this helps us understand the changes to subsistence in each community through time. And like I said, we've been doing this since 1990 in the same way. So it goes back quite a while. And the last question is, any comments for fish and game managers, or any concerns that people may have about the subsistence salmon fishery? And this is really a chance for household residents to speak. Again, there's no name, so it can be just your words, and that's fine. And at the end, we take back all this harvest data, we compile it all, and we publish an annual report each year that's available online. And like Sam had mentioned, it's important for management perspective, but also in the report, we contextualize the changes to subsistence each year on the Kuskokwim. So I hope that answered it. It might have been a lot long-winded, but I went through the survey each question for you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tim. It's really great information. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Adding on to what you were on your questionnaires, there are some fisher families that divide up the fish with other households, like siblings. Like if I was fishing this summer, and I would have probably two sisters that come in from another town in Alaska, then I would have to divide that with two other households of the total catches. They would have their share of the catch. Is that the part of the question in your questionnaires too?
So when that comes up, so we, like I said, we try to survey the head of household if possible, and we keep it at the household level, because then we ask the question about, did anyone give away? And we can also write a little comment note, so there's a spot the surveyor can write a note and kind of tell the story, so that when the surveys come back to our research analysts, the people that clean up all the data, they know the story and can ask the question, you know, can figure out how that works. But what we're trying to do is understand each harvest from each household.
Mm-hmm. The reason being is when we have a sibling that has moved away from this area, they're kind of restricted from going out and doing their own fishing. So, maybe that should be a part of your questionnaires in that order. I don't know. That would be something to think about.
Hey, we're always looking to improve the project. I appreciate the input, and you know, that's why it's important to talk to folks about this as we go along.
Yes, I know that ONC is a big part of that too, and I'm pretty sure that you guys have a personnel or a person that goes around, maybe here in Bethel or in the surrounding villages.
Yeah, so this is Jacob Wade with ONC. So we will hire four technicians, again, located here in Bethel. And we are also, the Fish Commission is also working with us on this, and they'll have one of their JV working with us as well. So we'll have five people out doing surveys starting around October 1st, you know, around that time. And we will be, you know, starting our door-to-door surveys, and so you'll see probably either two or three ONC vehicles around town, you know, going door to door, asking questions, or, you know, doing their surveys and stuff like that. And again, we'll continue that. Hopefully, we'll stop around Halloween, but you know, if weather cooperates, or you know, sometimes we just have a harder time getting the surveys, so we might extend into November sometime. Mm-hmm. And kind of carrying on with that, you will probably be seeing myself and the JV with the Fish Commission out and about in the probably towards the end of September a little bit. We'll be probably doing some recon, going around and, you know, checking out, okay, is this house occupied, is it abandoned, is it, you know, unoccupied, kind of that thing. So if you do see someone, a couple of people in an ONC vehicle just staring at a bunch of houses, just kind of slowly driving down the road staring at houses, we're just doing our recon before the postseason. So if you have any questions, feel free to come up, and I'll happily answer any questions if you see me out there. So we'll make sure that we'll have just some identification, you know, safety vest or whatever, so that way you can kind of see us, because I know as a daylight gets shorter, and we're going to be out there in the evenings and stuff like that, because that's when most people are home. So, but yeah, we're always happy to answer any questions. So if you do see me out and about when I'm doing this recon, feel free to stop me, and I'll happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, and with the state, do we have Sam? Do you have anything to add?
This is Sam Decker with Alaska Department of Fish and Game. We don't have anything else to add at this time. The this Kuskokwim postseason salmon harvest survey is really the next big project. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually hoping to travel along with them to go to some communities. Last year, I was able to work with them in Bethel, which was wonderful to get to meet with a bunch of fishers that maybe don't normally have the time to come in to the fish and game office or to attend a working group meeting. So I'm hoping to meet with more fishers this year. I would like to point out the question that you were asking, Sam. Mm-hmm. Just so you know that there is no limit on the number of fish that a family can harvest for subsistence.
Uh-huh.
And you have a right to share fish in any way that you want to. Mm-hmm. To support your community.
Yes.
And so all of those are legal subsistence uses. So what helps me as a manager is the run reconstruction. And for that, we need to know how many fish got to the escapement grounds and how many fish didn't get to the escapement grounds but entered the river and were caught.
Yes.
And so while the surveyors will be asking questions about your sharing networks, all of that is just a tool to get back to help you remember how many fish were actually killed.
Yes.
Because then that number goes into our run reconstruction. There are other things that we learn from the other data, which, as Tim mentioned, is confidential and voluntary. But this little nugget of the total number of fish killed in each community is what comes over to us at the Division of Commercial Fisheries and goes into Sean Larson's run reconstruction to help us really map out all of the influences on the number of salmon that returned to the Kuskokwim River and all of its tributaries.
And one of the things that have never been mentioned in our talk shows here is the trades that used to happen between especially with Nunavak Island people when they come in with their seal harvests and oil, seal oil. They would trade with the Kuskokwim people here with not whitefish, but the fish that were harvested, dry fish, you know. That is something that has never been mentioned. I'm pretty sure it still goes on. I still do it with certain berries that I don't have time to harvest during the summer due to family crisis and stuff like that. When that occurs, we have a death in the family, then everything sort of comes to a halt in that family, and that is the time when trades and sharing of the catch comes in big. So myself bringing that up is that I know that we had a family here that works right here in our station that have lost a family, and our heart goes out to them. Guyana, closing remarks. 2 minutes left. Maybe really, really, really quick. Starting with you, Tris, you that are here in the station, and then you two that are on air.
Yeah, just Goyana Sam for hosting another great show. And I did just want to mention, you know, one other piece of news about Kuskokwim salmon fisheries is there was a court ruling in the Ninth Circuit Court last week in the favor of rural residents of the Kuskokwim and the rural subsistence salmon priority. So I encourage folks to look into that. KYUK shared some reporting about it. There's some more information on the Fish Commission's website, kuskosalmon.org. But our Fish Commission had intervened in that lawsuit on the behalf of rural residents of the Kuskokwim and rural tribal residents. So very happy to see that and see tribes continue to have a seat in salmon management.
Thank
so
thank you, mm-hmm. Jacob.
Yeah, so thank you again for having me today. I appreciate it. So I'm just excited for this postseason. Again, I'm just excited to learn more about being out here in Bethel. I've learned a lot. I've enjoyed my time out here so far. So I'm excited to get out there and do some more surveying and get some more information out. And hopefully, if people want to stop and chat with me, I'm more than happy to. I'm all about, you know, getting to know the community more. So if you see me out and about, I'm always happy to talk.
All right. Sam?
Closing remark? Thank you again. Yeah, thank you. I was on mute. Thank you again, Sam, for hosting a wonderful Fish Talk. It's such a wonderful way to, you know, communicate what's going on with these agencies out to the people. So I just really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Last person?
Yep, this is Tim. Thank you, Sam, for having me today. And thanks to everybody else that called in and also presented. You know, really, like I mentioned, this project's been an honor to be a part of, and I do express my sincere thank you to all the community residents that pitch in and help out. So thank you all.
A word of caution to our boaters out there, it's starting to get dark at night, so be careful.